the bipartisan coalition that was there for years was very effective in getting legislation passed, and I'd like to see that happen again.
A push for change in the coalitions between state lawmakers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, working to better understand ocean acidification.
These waters naturally store more CO2 year-round, which means we're closer to a dangerous threshold to begin with.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
State Democratic Party officials are backing challengers to two Democrats who caucus with the Republican-led House majority. The challengers and party officials say this will increase the chances for a bipartisan coalition. Andrew Kitchenman of APRN and KTOO in Juneau reports.
There's a long history of rural legislators joining majority caucuses, regardless of the party. In the House, four Democrats from northern and western Alaska have joined the Republican caucus since 2009. This year, Benjamin Nagiak of Barrow and Bob Herron of Bethel are facing challengers backed by other Democratic House members and state party officials. Party chairwoman Casey Steinau says electing Dean Westlake of Kotzebue, who's challenging Nagiak, and Zach Fansler of Bethel, facing Herron, would increase the chance of a bipartisan coalition in the House.
That's how things get done and how we work together. Being who you are, but still reaching across the aisle and doing it as a group, as the coalitions do in Juneau. I think that the bipartisan coalition that was there for years was very effective in getting legislation passed, and I'd like to see that happen again.
While both legislative majorities have members from both parties, they generally don't describe themselves as bipartisan coalitions and only include rural Democrats. The Senate was led by a bipartisan coalition that included substantial numbers of both Democrats and Republicans from 2007 to 2012. Governor Bill Walker has been unable to get most of his fiscal plan through the legislature, despite support from some minority caucus Democrats and moderate Republicans. Now Democratic leaders want to grow this grouping into a majority. A fundraiser for Westlake and Fansler on Monday in Anchorage will be co-hosted by former U.S. Senator Mark Begich, as well as nine House members, among others. Westlake says the public sees the legislature acting in an increasingly partisan way, and this hasn't benefited rural voters.
One time, the Bush caucus was the strongest and probably the best thing for Alaska. Now, this wasn't Democrats. This wasn't Republicans. This is about Alaskans caring about each other, taking that party mantle off, and working together for the betterment of Alaska as a whole.
But Nagiak sees the work he's done as co-chairman of the House Resources Committee as being in the tradition of powerful rural legislators of the past, such as Al Adams.
I think what they're trying to do is minimize what we are doing, the Bush caucus in a way, what we are doing with the majority.
Nagiak says an oil and gas tax bill that he supported was scrutinized more than any other bill in recent years, and he says that it will benefit the residents he represents. This is the second straight election in which Westlake is challenging Nagiak. Nagiak won in 2014 by 131 votes of more than 2,000 cast. Herron says Democratic leaders have focused on the times when he voted with the majority rather than the issues where he opposed the Republican leadership. He cited his bucking the majority on the last major overhaul of oil and gas taxes in 2013 and his opposition to ending the last special session after a week. But Herron says rural legislators have served their constituents well by staying in the majority. He says this year is the first time he's aware of that any party is backing primary opponents to incumbents who follow this tradition.
Urban Democrats want this guy to win so they can take care of their constituents, and he's helping them. That's where I have an issue with this whole thing.
But Democratic Chairwoman Steinau says the official party organization plan since at least 2014 has said the party won't support legislators who don't caucus with the party. And Fansler says Herron has continued to support the majority caucus at a time when rural Alaska isn't benefiting from the policies it's pursuing.
If you look at the incumbents' voting record, it is pretty much lockstep with what the majority kind of votes. And, you know, I personally think that the agenda that they're pushing is not an agenda that's helpful to my district.
The possibility of a new bipartisan coalition in the House may become clearer on the primary day, August 16th. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Climate change may get all the attention, but it has a less talked about but no less troubling twin, ocean acidification. A growing chorus of Alaskans, from shellfish growers to fishermen, are fretting about the potential impacts to the state's waters. Now a new collaboration is aiming to bring ocean acidification into the spotlight, with the hope that better understanding it will better prepare the state to adapt. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
Historically, oceans are basic. That means not acidic. But about a quarter of the carbon dioxide released each year into the atmosphere is absorbed by the world's oceans, and that changes the chemistry of the seawater, making the oceans more acidic. That in turn makes it harder for ocean dwellers like crab, oysters, clams, and plankton to form shells, seriously threatening those species. Darcy Dugan is coordinator of the brand new Alaska Ocean Acidification Network, whose goal is to educate Alaskans and connect scientists across the state. She says since the Industrial Revolution, there has been an estimated 30% increase in the acidity of the waters globally.
And if you assume a business as usual scenario for emissions, then we'd be looking at the oceans being about 150% more acidic in 2100. And that's also more acidic than they've been in the last 20 million years.
The rapid change may be outpacing sea creatures' ability to adapt, and Alaska is expected to experience acidification faster and more intensely than other global neighbors because the water here is, as scientists say, cold and old. That is, cold waters and waters from the deep sea are already more acidic.
These waters naturally store more CO2 year-round, which means we're closer to a dangerous threshold to begin with. And then as winter storms bring colder water and older water to the surface, then the state can intensify.
Alaska's Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort seas are all expected to move out of their historic range of variability. Dugan says the Beaufort Sea is expected to leave its natural range this decade. And that could affect Alaskans' way of life. That's because the species most affected by acidification, like plankton, supports the state's most important fish, like salmon.
Right now we have a $5.8 billion seafood industry, and the concern is it's not just commercial species that might be affected by ocean acidification, but the species that they eat. So once you kind of knock one part of the food chain, the whole food chain feels the effects.
Plus, she says about half the seafood in the U.S. comes from Alaskan waters. Dugan hopes that a better understanding of the chemistry and ecology will help the state respond to future changes. That's where the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network comes in. They are working to connect scientists and communities from Kotzebue to Sitka and share best practices between researchers for monitoring changes, which will enable scientists around the state to respond and adapt to major shifts in the ecosystem Alaskans depend on. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, farming in Sitka the non-traditional way.
They're beautiful!
I know! Quail eggs are so cool! Quail are cool! I just love quail!
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
What's in the dirt in Alaska? Federal and state researchers teamed up to make it easier for everyone to find out. For the first time in nearly 40 years, Alaska has an updated atlas of the chemical composition of its earth, rocks, and minerals. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
The Geochemical Atlas is an outgrowth of another project. Geologists and surveyors were on a mission to find rare earth elements and minerals that could be strategically important to the country. Melanie Werdun is the acting chief of the state's Mineral Resources Section and one of the scientists who teamed up with the U.S. Geological Survey to investigate the state's minerals.
China was restricting the exports of rare earth elements, and you know they were a large source of that worldwide, and it caused an awareness that the United States needs to know more about all of the strategic and critical minerals and metals that it is heavily reliant on for imports.
That National Survey of Critical Minerals isn't done yet, but the newly updated Geochemical Atlas of Alaska was released in June. The atlas helps determine which parts of the state can be used for metals or mineral production, where the state's geothermal resources are, and potential geologic hazards to buildings, roads, and bridges. Werdun says one biologist talked to her about his wildlife research in the northern part of the state.
He was interested in studying why there were some deformities in moose up there. And one of the ideas he had was to look at the chemistry of the area, look at the alders, and see if they had elevated cadmium levels, and then tried to correlate that with rocks and moose habitat for eating willows.
A lot has changed since the last time geologists made a comprehensive map of the state. Jeff Mock, a research geologist at the USGS in Denver and one of the authors of the atlas, says testing of soil samples has become more complex. For example, 50 years ago, labs were well-equipped to test for elements that roll off the tongue, like copper. Now, batteries, cell phones, and laptops require soft metals that I'll let Mock pronounce.
Praseodymium, gadolinium, neodymium, and those are used in smartphones for things like speakers and microphones. And we weren't even analyzing for those for 50 years ago. So we just don't know about their distribution in the Earth's crust in Alaska.
The new atlas isn't exactly a tell-all book about where to go in Alaska to find things like platinum or gold. Rather, it maps the distribution of 68 elements that can be found across the state and indicates the mineral resource potential in Alaska. The atlas also isn't a comprehensive look at the state's geology. Mock says in some areas, it's difficult to gather reliable data.
It's mostly around the Yukon Delta, where there's simply no rocks at or near the surface. And because of that, there just aren't a lot of geochemical samples there. And even if there were, it'd be very difficult to interpret because they really aren't sampling bedrock. They're just sampling stuff that's been washed in from huge distances.
Mock says there will be lots of opportunity for researchers to use the maps as a launching point to dig deeper into the dirt. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Officials in Anchorage have taken the first step in what could be a major transformation to a vital piece of the state's transportation system. The Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Solutions Committee, or AMATS, approved a plan yesterday to pay for a comprehensive study of infrastructure affecting the downtown core. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Downtown Anchorage has several different road and traffic projects in various states of completion, and everyone from city leaders to community councils says the design plans need to be integrated. One way of doing that comprehensively, says Assemblymember Patrick Flynn, who sits on the AMATS committee and represents the downtown district, is figuring out what's not working right now. Almost like making a doctor's appointment when you're sick and hoping for a diagnosis and eventually a course of treatment. Except for roads.
There's a lot of symptoms around, and now it's trying to figure out what the appropriate course of action is and what the actual underlying causes might be.
Though small, the step has big potential. As Anchorage looks to its 2040 Metropolitan Transportation Plan, the recommendations on how to better connect the Seward and Richardson highways could determine the path of one of Anchorage's most vital traffic corridors. The recommendations from AMATS will also eventually take multiple projects out of planning limbo, giving property owners and residents in several downtown neighborhoods a better sense of what's in store for their communities. This is especially true for parts of Fairview, which is bisected by the Gamble Street connector. A number of community councils have asked for the city and state to finalize plans for the roadways downtown, saying the indecision has a negative impact on redevelopment efforts and property values. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz supports the study, saying it'll help local and state officials understand where their traffic pinches and eventually alleviate the sting.
This is in part a prescription for the Fairview area, because Fairview is bearing the brunt of the transportation pinch right now. People drive through it, and it has led to a difficulty in developing that part of town because of uncertainty. And if we can provide a measure of certainty, then we might encourage investors to participate there, and it enhances the quality of life for people who live there.
The resolution asks the state and AMATS committee to examine the environmental effects of linking the Seward and Richardson highways without the Kinnick Arm crossing option. Another sign the administration is developing long-term municipal plans that do not involve the controversial bridge. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
A Seattle-based company is one step closer to building a 49-unit senior housing facility in Juneau. If successful, it would cater to a region's housing market that's been historically difficult for everyone, especially Southeast's aging population. Earlier this week, the Juneau Planning Commission approved a conditional use permit for GMD development. The majority of the beds in the proposed unit will be low-income, affordable housing. Assemblyman Lauren Jones thinks it's a positive step for the community.
Where it's at is going to be next to the assisted living facility, so there'd be a senior complex there out in the valley, and I think it's very, very important to Juneau that that take place.
The location of the site is off Clinton Drive near Safeway. The nonprofit Senior Citizen Support Services plans to build a 90-apartment assisted living facility in the same area. Jones says the proposed housing project would help a market that really needs it.
I have every anticipation that there may yet be some construction work this fall, but I would suspect that construction would hopefully start next spring.
A 2014 market study estimated that over the next 30 years, Juneau will need more than 300 additional beds to meet demand given the city's limited space.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Eric Bork. This week on AK, the Tongass Rainforest isn't what you'd picture as a candidate for farm country. The terrain is rugged, the soil unstable, and it rains over 100 inches a year. The vast majority of Sitkins get their meat and dairy products off a barge shipped hundreds of miles. But Bobby Daniels of the Sawmill Farm is determined to change that. KCAW's Emily Kwong met with this fearless island farmer who is bringing eggs to Sitka the old-fashioned way.
Bobby Daniels has struck gold.
I'm getting grapes.
Except it's green and squishy.
Everything loves grapes. The chickens, the geese. I won't give them to the rabbits.
If the sawmill farm is an ark, Daniels is definitely Noah. She has 500 mouths to feed every day. But rather than order hay or grain online, Daniels collects cast-off produce from the grocery store, like these grapes. A few are starting to bruise on the end.
people just won't buy them. And so the grocery stores are really, they're in a hard spot.
That's where Daniels comes to the rescue. Her shopping cart, a teetering cornucopia of greens that she loads into her box truck. I hop into the passenger seat and there's a carton of quail eggs at my feet.
Don't smash those.
Ooh, they're beautiful.
I know, quail eggs are so cool. Quail are cool. I just love quail.
And those eggs, which are a lovely coffee-colored shade with brown speckles, are a token of victory for Daniels. Just 3 weeks ago, C-Mart began offering her eggs to customers.
They keep selling out, so yeah, I think that's the best response you can get, is that I can't keep up.
Daniels runs her errands with the focus of a honeybee, gathering nectar for the hive. At first glance, you'd think she's a fisherman in extra tufts. But make no mistake, Daniels is definitely a farmer. A farmer on a mission.
When I was little, it was family farms, and by the time I graduated from college, it was big agribusiness.
Daniels worked on some of those farms, and when she moved here from Indiana in 1998, she was troubled by the food cycle in Sitka.
We're taking thousands of tons of food that is perfectly good to feed animals, and we're barging it out of Sitka, and then we're barging this factory farm poor quality meat back to Sitka. That's insane.
So, Daniels started the sawmill farm in 2001 to attempt to close that loop. Financially, the farm isn't breaking even, but they're making some progress. Daniels and her business partner hope to have rabbit and chicken meat on grocery store shelves soon. But the learning curve for island farming has been pretty steep.
There's nobody to turn to who did this first to get any advice from.
Eagle and mink predation was terrible this winter. And try as she might to get the settings right on the chicken enclosure, the chicks kept piling on top of each other, crushing the ones beneath.
When you come in the morning and that's the scene, it just breaks your heart on every single level. We don't want animals living in miserable conditions. That's the kind of farming we don't like.
Even though she was counting on those broiler chickens for profit, Daniels is determined to figure out what went wrong before ordering more. She's an animal lover first, farmer second.
Okay.
It's time to visit the farm. We turn out the ducks for the day.
In here and swimming in the pond.
And then stop by the goat herd, where Missy from Wrangell is being milked today.
After that, you're milking a goat.
Her goat herd, by the way, is spoiled rotten. She feeds them alfalfa that's been misted with molasses and allowed to ferment. At one point, Missy swings her face toward me, and we're suddenly snout to snout.
Should I let her smell my breath?
That's how they get to know you.
Oh,
hello,
I see.
Missy. Hello.
I did brush this morning.
Now, selling raw milk is illegal in Alaska, but Daniels gets around that by selling shares of the herd. If you buy the goat, you get the milk. And because you can't have goat milk without bucks to start the breeding process, Daniels envisions one day loaning her bucks to other farms.
Kind of have a buck library, and then where you can check out the buck of your choice for your own goats.
That's really the second part
yeah.
of Daniels' mission,
yeah.
to support families and small-scale farms around Southeast who want to localize their food.
When I eat a rabbit, when I cook a rabbit, okay, I still can't do the killing, I'll admit that. But I'm there and I do everything else. I'll skin and gut and all that kind of stuff. But if you waste anything, you know, there's this huge awareness that something died for my dinner. And it you look at your plate and what you eat and how you eat differently when you are involved in making it happen. And I think it's a really good change.
Daniels is frank that the sawmill farm will never be able to keep up with the demand in Sitka. But more important to her than putting meat on the table is telling people the story of where it came from. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we caught up with Tracy George at the Democratic National Convention. George lives in Eagle River and went to Philadelphia as a delegate for Bernie Sanders.
I am a military spouse. I have been in Alaska since August of last year. So not even a year yet. I'm coming up on my year anniversary. So it's not about me reestablishing myself, but it's just me being who I am in every community that I go in. And then also being that person, it will gravitate others to me. I believe in that, just believing in the universe, bringing all things to you that you need when you need it. And that's actually what happens to me everywhere I go. I got involved because at the top of this year, 2016, my three-year-old son said to my family that he wanted to be president of the United States. So we're running a presidency campaign in 2048. Noble George, he's currently, like I said, three. So I am running a campaign to be a president's mother. It's all about, I came here to this convention based upon knowing that it's a future that we need to really and truly believe in, and that we're here for a true marathon. We're here for a long haul, and positioning ourselves today that we could be our better selves by the time I'm running that campaign again, and you know, really hard in 2048. So I've been a part of the Democratic Party literally all of my life and before birth and what have you. If you were to go and Google my family's legacy and all of that, you'll see that we've been some activists throughout the years, you know. So I am only doing what is expected of me, but then also what is actually required. I am old enough to know and realize that the current condition of our country has to change in order for that future that I want to believe in to be possible. We have had some epic journeys along this way, and I'm looking forward possibly to even more. However, I am in love with my current home state of Alaska.
Tracy George lives in Eagle River. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong and Liz Ruskin. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Eric Bork.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lakeed Rashavis, Andrew Kitchenman, and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
Apollo MT by Guardian Flight, Medevac memberships that protect you or a family member when there is a need for air medical transportation. Information available at apollomt.com.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.